1844, Chapter 22, The Great Depression and the New Deal in Georgia. Chapter Preview. Terms: New Deal, Barter, Subsidy, Labor Union, Relief, Strike, Cooperative, Recession, Minimum Wage. People: Robert Woodruff, Franklin D. Roosevelt, Robert Ramspeck, Robert Fechner, Carl Vinson, Urith Ed Rivers, Mary McLeod Bethune, Walter F. George. Places: Warm Springs. After the stock market crash at the end of October 1929, the economy continued to spiral down with a growing rate of unemployment, bank and business failures, and citizens losing their homes and farms. Those affected by the bad economy tried to cope as best they could. Although President Hoover did encourage some measures to make things better, many Americans thought that he did not do enough. By the 1932 election, Americans were ready for the government to take more action. Democratic presidential candidate Franklin Delano Roosevelt of New York promised just that. The program that the Roosevelt administration began, known as the New Deal, changed the relationship between the American economy and its government, and between the government and its citizens. After examining life in the era of the Great Depression, we will explore some of the major features of that New Deal and their impact on the country and on the state. Page 546, Section 1, Response to the Great Depression. As you read, look for effects of the Depression on Georgians, efforts to help, the election of 1932, term, barter. The weight of the Depression did not fall equally on everyone. Workers who kept their jobs continued to get by. In fact, with prices down, they could buy more with the money they earned. Large landowners were usually able to hold on. Sometimes they could even buy out small farmers who could no longer support themselves on the land. But for many, life was difficult as they tried to take care of themselves and their families. By the time of the 1932 election, Georgians, like a majority of Americans, hoped for change. They expressed that hope through their votes. Life in Depression, Georgia. Some companies actually did well during the Great Depression, including some Georgia companies. For example, Coca-Cola's profits actually went up after the Coca-Cola Export Corporation was founded in 1930 under the leadership of Robert Woodruff. During the Depression, Coca-Cola kept its prices low to keep its customers buying. Another company that grew in Georgia was Stuckey's, founded in the early 1930s. Williamson Stuckey, a pecan grower, began selling nuts and later his wife's pecan candies. The most famous of the candies was the pecan log roll. Sold along the highway to Florida, Stuckey's business moved from a roadside hut into a store in 1937. Stuckey's later had stores on highways throughout the nation. These are examples of good news stories of the 1930s in Georgia. Much of the news was bad. Almost one-fourth of the population was out of work at the height of the Depression. The atmosphere created by the struggling economy affected the entire country. In the cities, many families found themselves on the street when they could not afford to pay rent or make payments on their houses. Some people moved in with other family members. Others were homeless and tried to shelter themselves by building makeshift houses from scraps of whatever materials they could find. In some towns, vacant lots became filled with these shacks. These shack towns became known as Hoovervilles. Many blamed President Hoover for not doing enough to help the economy. Like the factory workers, many farmers, including those who had owned their land, lost their homes and farms. They could not afford to make the payments. Houses and land were sold at auction after families had been evicted. Many farm families took to the roads, trying to find work or places to live. Some ended up in Hoovervilles in towns if they had no relatives to take them in. In Georgia, Atlanta became the magnet for many escaping from the countryside, leading to even more overcrowding in the poor areas of the city. Georgians, like other Americans, responded to the hard times by trying to take care of themselves. Those able to keep their houses often rented out rooms to help make ends meet. Yards became gardens as people tried to grow food for their families. Women began to return to the old ways of taking care of their families, such as canning foods and sewing their family clothing. Household furniture and other goods were sometimes sold for a fraction of what they were worth to try to raise money to buy food. Everything was used and recycled, put to another use. Men sometimes left their families in the hope of finding jobs in other places and sending money home. Throughout the Depression, there were hobos who hopped on trains or walked the highways looking for work. Most towns tried to keep newcomers moving. They had enough trouble feeding their own citizens. Private charities tried to help. Soup kitchens, the Salvation Army, and churches tried to feed the hungry. Lines formed, and the hungry waited as long as they had to for whatever little bit of food they might receive. The Savannah mayor asked fishermen to donate some of the fish they caught to the hungry. Towns and cities tried to get programs going to help connect people to any jobs that might be available. In Atlanta, a program was set up to put people to work, not for money, but for goods or food. Towns and cities sometimes had campaigns to raise money from those who still had some. Community chest organizations, the forerunner of the United Way, spent weeks raising funds that might be gone within one day because the need was so great. The needs during the Depression were beyond the ability of private efforts alone. The jobs held by women were often the target of city and state governments. Many believed that men were the providers and should have the jobs. In many places, married women were not allowed to keep their jobs. This was particularly true for women school teachers. Married women could not get hired, and working women who got married were fired. Private businesses and governments sometimes fired female workers as well. In spite of that, even more women tried to find work, often for less pay, just to help their families survive. In some families, the woman's salary was the only money coming in. African Americans and other minorities, male as well as female, faced particular discrimination. The unemployment rate was twice as high for blacks as for whites. Many whites took the jobs that had once been reserved for blacks, such as domestic work, janitorial work, and serving as elevator operators or hotel bellhops. Some Atlanta whites tried to prevent the hiring of African Americans as long as any whites were out of work. Social workers in Atlanta estimated that as many as 3/4 of black Atlantans may have been without jobs by 1933. Many Atlanta businesses owned by blacks also failed. Citizens Trust Bank was the only African-American-owned bank to survive and the first to join the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, FDIC, one of the New Deal programs. By 1932, as the economy continued to get worse, many Americans were becoming uneasy. By 1931, Georgia had a family farm income of around $675 per year. Many families had so little cash that they operated by bartering, trading, goods, rather than using cash. Georgia textile workers made less than half what those in the North made. Many Georgians lived in difficult, if not desperate, circumstances. They wanted a change, and the upcoming election provided hope of that. The election of 1932. The Republican presidential candidate in 1932 was President Herbert Hoover, who was running for re-election. He had aged considerably during his 4 years as president due to the stress of the Great Depression. Many Americans believed that he had not done enough to help the country once the Depression had begun. They had also lost confidence in his leadership and feared that the economy would continue to slide downward. By 1932, the country was ready for a change. That included some Americans who had not been as personally affected by the Depression, but who feared that the discontented might rise up in some kind of revolution. In general, Americans felt that bold action was needed. Democratic presidential candidate Franklin Delano Roosevelt promised just that. Roosevelt was willing to experiment, to try actions to see what might work to bring the economy back. Many Georgians already felt a connection to Roosevelt, or FDR, as he was sometimes known. He had been coming to Warm Springs for several years in the belief that the warm, 88-degree waters were beneficial for his condition. Roosevelt had contracted the disease infantile paralysis, or polio, in 1921. Although many had predicted that his condition would end his political career, he had proved them wrong by winning the governorship of New York in 1928. After the Depression began, New York was one of the states that took action to help its citizens, and that made Roosevelt popular. Roosevelt said on one occasion that he was at least an adopted Georgian. Many of the newspapers in the state strongly supported Roosevelt in the Democratic primary election. When Georgia held its primary, Roosevelt won all Georgia's delegates to the Democratic National Convention. He thanked Georgians, saying, "I am particularly happy by the Georgia vote and deeply appreciate the confidence shown in me by what I have been pleased to call my other state." Roosevelt's connection to Georgia turned out to be an important one for the state and the rest of the South. He had seen the rural poverty of the sharecropper shacks of the Georgia countryside. He knew that most had no electricity or modern conveniences. As programs in his administration developed, images of the Georgia that he rode through on his way to Warm Springs stayed in his mind. In his campaign of 1932, Roosevelt promised Americans a New Deal. He said in a speech for Oglethorpe College in Atlanta that the country needed bold, persistent experimentation. He wanted to try something. If that something did not work, he would stop it and try something else. When Roosevelt came to Georgia in the fall campaign, the Atlanta newspaper said that Georgia welcomed him in heartfelt, joyous acclaim, a modern Moses who is to lead a darkened America out of a wilderness of depression. Georgia Democrats, including Governor Richard Russell, campaigned hard for Roosevelt. Roosevelt carried all of the southern states in his November 1932 victory. Over 3,000 Georgians traveled to see him inaugurated. In the White House, Georgians finally had someone who knew their state and its problems. Reviewing the section. 1. Name two ways Georgians tried to cope with the Depression in the 1930s. 2. How were women and African Americans in Georgia affected by the Depression? 3. Who was elected president in 1932? Page 552, Discovering Georgia, The Little White House. Less than 1 mile outside the small community of Warm Springs, Georgia, is the National Historic Landmark known as the Little White House. Owned by the state of Georgia, it is run as a state park and historic site open to tourists. In 1921, Franklin Roosevelt contracted the polio virus. It left him paralyzed from his waist down. In 1923, his friend George Peabody bought an old resort in Warm Springs called the Meriwether Inn. Peabody told Roosevelt about a young polio victim who had found healing in the swimming pools of the inn. Those pools were fed by the warm spring waters of the small town. In October 1924, Roosevelt visited the Meriwether Inn and swam in the spring-fed pools. He believed that the waters did indeed help improve his condition. 2 years later, Roosevelt bought the resort and some additional land from Peabody. He founded a charitable organization which built a hospital to treat those with the disease. Roosevelt became governor of New York in 1928. In 1932, he was elected president of the United States. Through all this, he continued to come each year to get therapy in the Warm Springs waters. In 1932, he built a 6-room cottage with a deck to service his home away from home. When he became president, the home got the nickname the Little White House. Throughout the tough years of his presidency, as he grappled with the problems of the Depression and later World War II, Roosevelt came to Warm Springs. Sometimes advisors and leaders met him there so he could continue his important work. He signed the Rural Electrification Act at Warm Springs. At the end of March 1945, a tired Roosevelt arrived in Warm Springs. In February, he had met with other Allied leaders at Yalta in the Soviet Union to make major decisions about the war's end. On April 12th, as he sat for an artist painting his portrait, he had a massive stroke. He died shortly afterward. His wife, Eleanor, came down to escort his body by train back to Washington. As his train passed through Georgia and other states, hundreds came to the tracks to pay respect to their president. Many wept. Today, the house is as it was on the day Roosevelt died, including his unfinished portrait.